So before I do my own talk, I'm just going to begin by saying I was really grateful to Joe for not graduating before I got to teach him. People kept saying to me, you really want to teach Joe? That was quite a class. It was a really great experience. And now I'm going to switch hats from my foray into the Canadian experience, at which I always had to apologise at the beginning for an Australian being in a Canadian classroom and saying, I really don't know anything about your languages. You know, these are the things I know. But so now I'm going to talk about the Australian environment and the things that I'm doing with my life. That's what this presentation is really about. So I'm going to begin by briefly introducing the Resource Network for Linguistic Diversity, and then I'm going to spend most of the time talking about the Documenting and Revitalising Indigenous Languages Training Program. The organisation that we fondly call RENLD, that's how you say our acronym. RENLD was founded in 2004. Nick Teeberger and I at the time saw that there was really a need for a base for resource sharing internationally. Many of the things that people were trying to do around the world were replicating each other, and people were starting from scratch over and over and over again, and there was at that point, no one location for many of the resources that we needed to be able to do our work or to ask people questions and say, how can I do this? Does somebody have this kind of resource? So we started RENLD as largely a web-based volunteer organisation. The resource sharing on our website, which I now like to also fondly say was one of the world's worst websites until more recently, very clumsily put together, and the discussion list that also started in 2004 and continues to grow today. Our mission continues to be to advance the sustainability of Indigenous languages and to increase the participation of Indigenous peoples in all aspects of language documentation and revitalisation. We have these four key strategies. We focused primarily on the first three through the first 5 years of RENLD's existence. There was some training that we did locally and at universities in some language centres. But it's really been in the last 2 years that we've started focusing very intensively on this fourth mission, which is the training component of the work. So that's what I'm going to talk mostly about today. So we're now in our seventh year, coming up to our seventh year, and we're really pleased that we're able to say that RENLD now is a staffed organisation. We have some 600 members, many more people who use the resources, and we now actually do have staff, and I'm most excited by being able to say it's not just me now, but it's also three Aboriginal people who are just starting to come on board and work alongside of me. Leslie Woods and Brad Steadman are both Ngiyampaa people. Their homeland is in Western New South Wales, and Vicky Cousins is a Gunditjmara woman from Western Victoria, and so they are co-trainers in the program. In 2009, RENLD received funding for the first time from the Maintenance of Indigenous Languages and Records grant scheme. Yesterday, Doug Marmion talked about the NILS, the National Indigenous Languages Survey, that was first undertaken in 2005, and recommendation 52 in that document was that RENLD should be funded, and and the government apparently agreed. So we started getting some funding, both to forward the wider goals of RENLD, so the networking and resource sharing and advocacy, but primarily to start developing the Documenting and Revitalising Indigenous Languages training program. And so this is what I would say probably about 70 or 75% of my work is concerned with developing this training program. So it is a strategic training program with national scope, and it's been developed, as I hope that you'll see shortly, to have a great deal of local flexibility. In developing this training program, the concern was really to offer training that would meet the needs of Aboriginal people who wanted to be able to develop and to run all phases of their own language projects. So we were aiming to serve the needs of people who already had a language program going but felt that they needed more training, or who had the goals, the aspiration to develop a language program but didn't know how to leap in and start doing that. Part of the flexibility is that we work with individuals, with small family groups, training staff in language centres and Indigenous organisations, and starting to work with some school language teams now. So, you know, all different kinds of combinations of people, all age groups, come into this program. We start with on-site intensive workshops and then work from a distance, and I'll expand on these points later on. The transfer of training capacity is something that we do right from the start, and again, we'll see some examples of this. Oops, wrong way. This model doesn't require people coming into the program to have any level of educational background at all. So we do have some people who we're working with, even at this stage, who don't have literacy in any language. We have a couple of people who have literacy in their own language, in the Aboriginal language, but don't have literacy in English. One of the ways in which the program was developed was to work with people who, one, might not want a formal program at this stage or ever, so they might just want a specific skill so that they can get on with their work, or also, I think, a relatively large population of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have, you know, for a wide range of reasons, not had good educational experiences, and so don't want to go into a formal learning program. And so this is not a formal learning program. I'll talk a little bit later as well about the potential stepping stones to formal education. The program is really designed to build and to emphasise autonomy. So for Aboriginal people, really, it's a very responsive program. So that's something I want to emphasise right from the beginning. At no point is it us saying, these are the things that you need to do what you want to do. It's people who have some kind of program going or who want to get it going who are saying to us, this is what I want to learn to get to the next stage. And this is also a point that I'll emphasise, that, you know, many of you will know from both sides of the coin that relationships in some cases have been damaged between external partners and communities historically, or in some cases in the current environment as well. So there may not be good relationships between linguists and community members, or educators and community members, archivists and community members. So we're trying to develop strategies so that we can, as one of my co-trainers says, so that we can come back around and start from the other side and then try to strengthen those relationships again. I've talked about the fact that it's a very flexible structure. It's not an accredited program, so there is no formal qualification that comes out of drill. And I'll come back to that at the end, because we're revisiting that at the moment. We customise a training program in every case for each separate person or group of people with whom we start working. So we sit down with them. The first phase is always that negotiation stage of what is it that you're wanting to do, where are you at now, what might we be able to offer. So the training doesn't look the same in any site. There are some parallels. People don't have to take all of the modules that that we offer. We look at the array and then make decisions about where we'll start and where we might go from there. So one of the things that's important to say is I did start just developing this in mid-2009. So we're now just in the pilot phase. The pilot started in mid-2010. So everything that I'm talking about here is really, up for grabs in a way. We're evaluating it at every pilot workshop. We're changing things as we go, sometimes overnight, where it just seems this doesn't work. We need to be doing this way instead. And so, we're constantly changing the way that the program is running. But we currently do have these 29 modules. And 11 of them have been piloted in various workshops up to this point. So I'm actually going to even backtrack from the people don't have to take any of the modules because they do. So we started with that flexibility, but after the first couple of workshops, we decided that the first module, the developing a language project, was a foundational module that we were going to do with everybody. And so now we do have this one, which is our negotiating starting point module. So it's a very practical kind of training program at all stages, because people are working on their own language project right from the time that we arrive there. They're already doing it, and so the training is based on the work that people are doing or are wanting to do. We do a lot of work in the initial stages about identifying different roles in a team and looking for leadership in the different areas that people are wanting to work in. There's a lot of building of partnerships all the way through. So last year when the pilot commenced through, so we piloted through several months last year, and we worked with 9 different languages last year. So this actually doesn't, it's not a completely accurate picture. We haven't yet started working in the 2 sites in New South Wales, but I start those 3 days after I get back from Hawaii, so I figured it was reasonable to to include them here. So we worked with 9 different languages last year, and 2 more languages will come on board in the next month, and probably another 4 in Western Australia will join the program later, maybe in the first half of the year. And we're also talking with people, speakers of 2 Northern Territory languages about joining the pilot later in the year. So it's a rapidly growing enterprise. I'm not sure, maybe that's reasonably visible. So this is part of that foundation module, developing and managing projects. This too is part of the Movable Feast. This is one of the starting templates that we use. The template really is actually more for the trainers than for the trainees, because whether we use this paper version depends on who we're working with. So some of the participants are highly skilled. We have a couple of people who have master's degrees. As I said, we have some people who don't have literacy in any language. So the way that we work through this really depends on who it is that we're working with. And we have some people who have quite a high level of education. One man I'm thinking of who said to me, I don't like writing, I don't want to write anything. And so that, we go with whatever is happening. This is really our starting point. We go through this process of getting people to talk about what the big goals are, and then how are we going to break that down into chunks? Because I think, commonly probably in this room as well, if you ask people what it is that they want to do with their language, it's those huge goals. I would like my language to be spoken right through all generations. I'd like a dictionary and a grammar and absolutely, and so do we, and not in the next 2 weeks. So where's our starting point? How do we get to our starting point? How do we move from there onto the other kinds of components? And who's going to do what? That's one of the really critical parts here. There's all kinds of protocols that are built in here. So we go through permissions, we go through talking about ethics and the ethics of working with your own language and what kind of permissions you might or might not need to work with other people in your community. One of the issues that Leanne and I talked about over lunch, you know, can the people in this team all work together? Are there avoidance relationships? Who can work together? Who can be in the same vehicle together if we go out on bush trips and so forth? What equipment do we need? What skills do we need? So we do this kind of of mapping. So this was with one group. Again, it looks very different depending on who we are and who we're working with. And so this is just, you know, us mapping out all of those kinds of issues about what might we do during this workshop. What does the planning look like? And we go through, we revisit that planning process every day. So, you know, where were we at yesterday? What happened as a result of the planning that we did yesterday? You know, people in this workshop, for example, said that they wanted to record several elders. So then we went through the process of how are you going to get those people here, in this case, to the language centre. And part of the building independence and autonomy here was, so the response of the language workers here was, well, KJ, the linguist, will get them and bring them here. And so then we just go through this kind of, well, so KJ's on leave for 3 months. How are we going to get the elders here to the language centre? Well, Jenny, the receptionist, will bring them here. So Jenny's off sick today. So how are we going to get the speakers here to the language centre? And just, you know, repeatedly going through these kinds of cycles of leading people in different ways towards seeing what skills they have themselves and what kinds of things they absolutely can organise for themselves. So then the next day we revisit this, you know, what happened when you went and talked to the elders, who's going to be coming in today and who's going to be doing which job and so forth. We go through this process too of identifying skills and strengths, which has been, I think, is proving to us to be a really valuable process. And we ask people to reflect first of all on what skills they already have. Which is a very challenging process because culturally it's really uncomfortable for people to sit down and say, I'm good at X. So one of the things that we emphasise here is that this is personal. This is for somebody for themselves. It's not for us. It's not something we collect up. It's not for them to show to anybody else necessarily. And we start with whatever emerges here, and we also really emphasise that it's not about what degree I have or where I went to school. It's about I'm a skilled fisher. I can play the guitar is something else that came out. So all of these kinds of skills that build into to language projects. If you're going to do a project on fishing, you want the person who knows the technology and the fish names and so forth. And from the skills, what do I enjoy doing? Because you might, you know, from my personal perspective, I have to do the financial records for Reynold at the moment and the bookkeeping because we don't have that person. I do it very competently. I have that skill. I loathe it. It's it's not on the what do I enjoy doing. And that's a really important step because if you've got more people in your group, then you can say, you know, if you like doing the bookkeeping, that's yours, honey. I'm out of here. You know,
so it's hard to find people that like that.
Yeah. But interestingly, it does come out. And we do find people who say, I really enjoy getting things together. And other people say the obvious things that kind of are obvious, like I hate chasing up people to get things happening. You know, somebody else doesn't mind doing those kinds of things. What am I best at? And what would I prefer not to do? And again, that's really important because things come out. One man said to us, I really don't like being in the adult language classes. And then when we explored that more, it turned out he felt he didn't have good literacy skills in his heritage language. It was an adult class for non-Indigenous people. They would ask him what the word was. He couldn't read it back. And there'd not been an opportunity for that to come out in the working environment. So this is a place. And he was able to say, I love working with kids, not with adults. Thank you. So we do this kind of mapping, and then we revisit it at the end of the workshop to add on the kinds of things that people have gained through the workshop. So the top section here is the things that people came up with first of all, and then the bottom section are the things that people added. I'm just going to really scroll through here. So these are some of the modules that we have already piloted. In this case, a young woman who came into the workshop not knowing what her heritage language was because her grandparents were part of the stolen generation. And although Leslie, as my co-trainer, said, it took me years to find out what language group I came from, and Leslie actually thought she'd identified her language group and named her son using a word in a language that turned out to be the wrong language later on. You know, she loves him, that's okay. In this case, it was just quite the opposite and quite extraordinary, and Jess found evidence of her language group on the second day. We teach people about the archives that exist and how they can use those archives, and that's what Clint is doing there. And then we work with things like the IATSIS archive, the National Language Archive, to try and find what materials exist for that language. And in some cases, I might know the answer to this already, but that's not the point. You know, it's really people discovering this and then mapping out, you know, who has already worked on the language, which names come up, which names recur. Maybe those people are still around, still working on the language. Let's see if we can track them down. You know, do you want to start bridging back to that linguist, to that anthropologist, and so forth? And we've already had some really nice outcomes from that of people bridging across and building those relationships again. So people learning to use equipment, starting to make their own recordings. A lot of this is a lot of what we're doing. A lot of people in the community have their own heritage collections that either they've made themselves or they've inherited from their mother and so forth, who made recordings. So a lot of what we're doing is we're finding this, where this elder sort of upended a calico bag full of dust and various kinds of recordings, mini discs, mini cassettes, video and so forth. Some of them restricted material, men only access, but not labelled that way. So then we go through teaching people digitisation, talking about metadata. People start putting together. So this woman is working with recordings her mother made over a very long period of time, and she's repatriating a lot of those materials from other researchers, starting to put together databases. I'm just going to really quickly... people starting to learn to speak their own languages for the first time in each of these cases. As you can see, people of all ages. We do the skill sharing right from this time that we start. So in the top section, I did the developing your project with two people. And then this young woman joined this workshop on the second day. And so Jody went through the developing your language project with her, and then Bianca's uncle up there came along the next day to start working with her, and so Bianca went through the process with him, with me mentoring in each case. So we immediately are encouraging people to start passing their skills on to somebody else and reinforcing those skills. Lots of highlights just from the pilot. So one woman we worked with in Western Australia after 3 days of training, and she has a master's in social work and works as a social worker, and she said, I want more of this. And so she's applied to the University of New England for their master's in applied linguistics program, and we hope start later in the year. We have people who are already starting to apply for grants to do more of the work of preserving their heritage materials, people who are already starting to use languages that they're only just learning to speak. Fabulous feedback. I'm following John Hobson's example here of showing fabulous feedback. And I'm just going to quickly go to the where to from here. We're still piloting. My three co-trainers are coming to Kununurra in the north of Western Australia with me next month so that they can be doing some on-site training while we're running a training workshop with the language workers. We're preparing more instructional videos. We have our IT consultant is getting our website, part of our website, organised at the moment so that we can have a chat facility for participants from across the country to talk to each other and get support from a distance. And I shouldn't be skimming over this, but we've had quite a lot of feedback from people who said they might want a qualification from this. So we are hoping that later this year we can have somebody come on board to start looking at the possibility of having an accredited pathway while I'm still committed to keeping this more flexible stream going as well. So I'm an overtime chair of our session, so I'll apologise, stop, and invite Carol to come up.